Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome back to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis. I'm Ruth Jackson, and before we hear from our guest today, just a quick reminder to check out our website where you can find lots of great articles and podcasts as well as more C.S. Lewis content. Visit premierunbelievable.com. We are very pleased to be hosting Tim Keller for our next Unbelievable live event on Tuesday the 13th of December. Dubbed New York's Pastor to Skeptics, Tim Keller is a renowned speaker, author, and former pastor of Redeemed Presbyterian Church, New York. Having written and spoken frequently on the problem of pain, Tim has faced his own journey with suffering since being diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in 2020. Tim will share some of the lessons that he's learned over the past 2 years, as well as giving his thoughts on the direction of US church and culture. Join Tim Keller, Justin Briley and me in a live show on Tuesday the 13th of December, where you'll also be able to ask your questions. It's free to attend online from anywhere in the world. Register at unbelievable.live. But now for today's show. Well, I'm joined again by Joshua Karras, the author of The Incendus Letters, an appropriation of C.S. Lewis's classic book, The Screwtape Letters. We heard a little bit about this in a previous episode. But Joshua, why don't you tell us what are some of the modern challenges that you address in your book?
Thank you for having me once again. Great to be here. It's the modern challenges that I think I really wanted to explore are those that are as much as possible commonly experienced by many. So that would be technology, pride, resentments, anxiety. You have sustaining relationships, losing a loved one. There's money in relationship, poor health, betrayal. Just, I think, very common and very difficult human experiences.
I love that you sort of talk about technology as a form of gluttony. I'm not sure I've ever really heard anyone do that before. Would you explain a little bit more about, you know, what was the inspiration behind that and how you did that?
I think personally, many of these experiences were in some way or another, directly or indirectly, experienced by myself at some point in time. So I am aware of, in this particular example, there was a time in my life where I considered myself very open to showing off any and all gifts, virtues that I had, and it was all very Christian because I was shining my light. It was a very insidious type of pride that I thought was simply doing what the Bible had told me to do. And so I think that I derived from that, from my early teenage years, and then linking it with gluttony from the perspective that these vices, these common vices, do bounce off each other, because with pride comes a hunger for more. And that is the definition of gluttony. So I think that was the root motivation behind that particular chapter.
And so how did you come up with those things? Because obviously when you were thinking of writing this, you wanted to do a kind of modern twist on Lewis's classic. And obviously you mentioned in the previous episode, a lot of the things that Lewis was talking about were quite particular to his time. So, you know, it being set in wartime and things like that. How did you think, right, these are the big modern things that are affecting us today? Or was it, as you say, these are the things that me and my friends are struggling with, and therefore, you know, that's kind of what we'll talk about?
Great question. I want to firstly say, and this is so important, I was supported by my God all the way through this. I don't consider myself much of a writer. It's funny saying that. If I was trying to sell books, I'm doing a terrible job. but I think that there was definitely supreme divine intervention to get this over the line. That absolutely goes without saying. When I was thinking of these topics, it was difficult to, the first thing I'll say is it was very difficult to tangibly separate them out, because many of these experiences that are explored are quite, you know, you can, they're mixed. Chapter 16 is poor health. Chapter 17 is fear of the unknown. Poor health includes within it a fear of what is going on with your body that you don't know about. So in suppose trying to separate them out, it was basing it off roughly the what an individual may or may not go through chronologically throughout the life. Similar, because it makes sense to do it that way, because it, as per Screwtape Letters, we are watching it, the letters are in an order, are in order of time. So it's unlikely that this individual would be concerned about their poor health as a child, because they don't quite have that mature understanding and capacity to have anxiety and resentment about their condition. However, they will have annoyances about and potential to be obsessed with video games. Right. That's why it comes earlier on. So what helped me to answer your question directly, I thought about what in each, there are 30, if we were to dissect a life into 30 pieces, into 30 stages, what is the primary issue of that particular group, or that stage of life? And then let's explore that further.
And I suppose in a similar way to Lewis's writing within his context, but it being applicable to lots of other people, that was kind of your experiences that you were using, obviously, as we all do, using some of your own experiences and people around you. But the idea being that actually this is much widely, that's definitely not a word, much more widely applicable to other audiences.
There are a couple of chapters that I am not sure are particularly very common. But because they played such a huge role in my personal life, the motivation and the capacity for me to write it was like writing it. That was the easiest part of the book. If you remember me saying that sometimes I would write a whole chapter in a night. Those chapters that came easily were the ones that were always very close to my heart and I was in that. I was currently running, experiencing it in my life. So, just that's a. I think an important point that you've raised, definitely correct. I had to include a bit of myself into this. Yeah.
In Screwtape Proposes a Toast, there's a bit where Lewis says in the preface that he didn't actually really enjoy writing the Screwtape Letters. Let me just read you a little bit, because I'd love to know what you think.
Please.
About it.
Yes, go ahead.
So he says, though it was easy to twist one's mind into the diabolical attitude, it was not fun, or not for long. The strain produced a sort of spiritual cramp. The world into which I had to project myself while I spoke through Screwtape was all dust, grit, thirst, and itch. Every trace of beauty, freshness, and geniality had to be excluded. It almost smothered me before I was done. I mean, that's pretty full on. I mean, what do you think of that?
Writer?
Yeah, he's amazing. But you know, what do you think of that? And was that kind of your experience of actually it being really difficult to delve into the mind of a diabolical demon?
No, he did the hard work, Lewis. He trailblazed. It was fun. I had fun because he was inventing something. he was exploring into the unknown, doing something that had not been done before. I have seen and benefited as a reader from this work. And because I know its impact, because I know it is, because I am enchanted by the language and the impact of the book upon my life, I think that was armor against that. I was always confused. When I read that just before, as I mentioned, I read a lot of his works just before writing the book. When I read that, I was a little bit surprised, and I thought, I'm really excited. I hope this doesn't happen to me. And it didn't. Yeah, I really enjoyed the bleakness, because I knew I was coming back to a sense of coming back to my religion, to coming back to my faith.
Yeah.
That was just there. And I think C.S. Lewis allowed me to have that safety net, because he had already done it before me.
So how did you delve into the mind of a devil? You mentioned there that obviously some of the hard work was done by Lewis himself, but you still had to get into the mindset of a devil,
yeah,
I suppose.
Sure, sure.
How did you do that? Is it like a method actor, like delving deep into the grips of hell?
Yeah, actually, you've just got me. I haven't even consciously realized this, but sometimes when the thoughts were coming too quickly and I couldn't type fast enough, I would do a speech-to-text dictation. And my wife noticed this about me, that when I was in the stages of the letters, that was where he's giving advice on how to stop, on how to help accomplish an evil in this soul's life. She did notice that my voice would go quite conspiratorial, if that's a word. So the first thing you must, I would actually just sound, you know, I'd sound a little bit
devilish.
Yes, just in devilish, insidious. So I think that there would have had to be some method acting. And I was always remembering, it's a great question, I was always remembering that the techniques that he is encouraging, that Maniacus is recommending to be employed, are attacks on individual, that they are demons, we know this. And so to be on the other side, launching the attacks instead of receiving them, almost acted as a respite for me, because I did not have to. How do I explain this? When we think about temptation, we are used to being on the receiving end.
Mm.
So to be on the other side, that's why I mentioned it was fun. I'm going back, I'm not quite answering this question. I'm going back to the previous one, because I've explored, I'm thinking about it on a deeper level. It was fun and relieving to be for a moment on the other side of launching attacks, as opposed to receiving them.
Yeah.
To be on the offensive. With the constant reminder that what I'm actually doing is trying to, you know, engage with people on this deeper spiritual level. So it felt really good. Going back to the most recent question, I certainly had to research, understand what it is to engage in temptation, and then to creatively conceive interesting and thoughtful ways of expressing how a temptation should occur was my next some step in the process of writing. So be excited to be someone launching attacks on this hypothetical person. Then look at how research, you've got to do your homework. Look at how devils exist. I mean, I think in, what was it, letter 3, History of Demonkind, I had to do a lot of research to ensure that I was exploring what we understand demons to be. And then, yeah, that had to put this feeling of launching attacks through a filter of attempted well-written verse that is creative and entertaining for the reader.
Do you think there's a slight sense in which, as you were writing this from the perspective of the tempter, you were sort of slightly safeguarding yourself against some of these temptations?
I learned so much about myself through growing this, I know that sounds a little bit cliched, but truly, when I would explore the way to combat, many of the letters have a bit of a structure, situational context. What's this human soul up to? What you should do, what the enemy, i.e. God and et cetera, what can be done? So that third part in particular was very nourishing for my spiritual life personally, because I was able to re-explore, remind myself and restore that calm, that no matter what the enemy has got, no matter what, you know, the demons have got in mind, there is always an answer for support from our God.
The enemy, as it is in your book.
The enemy, as I'm so used to writing.
In the first chapter of your book, Maniacus, the Older Devil says, consider yourself a wave enduring and faithful as it batters the coastal stone. I was really struck when I read that. What do you mean by that? Are you kind of talking about the sort of subtle dangers of sabotage?
Subtle, enduring, consistent, ongoing. I think just the nature that when we are facing something that is a vice of ours, it's not always going to be a very shot to our souls. Sometimes we are worn down over time, and then you can explore the concept of lukewarmness. A very popular Christian virtue, vice, that explains how in all of our fervor and desire to be a wonderful Christian, life is weary and wearisome, and we can grow tired and cool down and become lukewarm. And that is the same. They're two different metaphors, but we can be beaten down as wave after wave. You'll never notice the changes that are happening, but bit by bit, it's very possible to be worn down. And I think it's a very common way that people experience downfall and unfortunate times in their life. So that's why I kind of prefaced it right at the beginning, because I wanted it to, it was a very important point for me to kind of get out there. It's actually one of my favorite lines. So thank you for bringing that up. It is a really important notion and very common.
And I suppose, you know, we might have our eyes open to some of those more obvious, in inverted commas, dangers, mightn't we? You know, the gluttony, technology, whatever it is, but actually that kind of subtle battering of the soul is just something that is, as you say, thread throughout everything. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Joshua, there's a letter right at the end of your book. So you've got the story, as it were, and I won't give away the end of the story, but it sort of tells the whole story of the patient's life. And then you have this letter at the end. What's that about? I mean, obviously the whole thing is letters, but there's a letter about marriage.
Yes.
Right at the end. What's that?
So it's in the contents, so I'm not giving it away. It's, as you may have read, it says letter from the human to his fiance on their wedding day. So I don't want to bury the hatchet. I will say that this is a letter that my wife received on our wedding day. I'll just say that. I wanted to provide some semblance of personalized humanity about this human that we have been reading about the whole book, but we don't know we know so little about. So I did base it off. I'm not saying by any means that I am this person who lives on to a very old age. I think we can give that much away. Whatever happens to him, happens to him. State that I've gone through all of these things, but I did want to put this letter in as a means of reminding people that this person had a life, had a voice. I wanted to give a voice to the character that is the third character of this book that doesn't really receive any opportunity to speak or have his side shared or explored.
Yeah, that is a really good point, isn't it? Because in many ways, they're sort of the protagonists of the story because it's all about them. But exactly. As you say, they never get to actually say anything or give their opinion of the story or sort of come back in any way, do they?
It goes from third person all the way through to being, to just give him his moment in first person before the end. Yeah.
As we come to the end of this episode, would you just say, I don't know whether you have thought about whether C.S. Lewis would have any advice to give the patient in either his original Screwtape Letters or in your sort of modern take on it. I mean, do you think there would be any advice that he would give to the patient? And do you think it would be the sort of the same advice in light of some of those modern challenges? Or do you think his advice in your context would be quite different?
Actually, my publisher from Sensational Group Press asked a very similar question to me in challenging me to, as we were discussing the writing. And it was, so I have some semblance of an answer. The baseline answer is that, the boring answer is that I think the advice that C.S. Lewis would give to the patient would be the advice that the demon says, make sure you avoid.
Right, so the opposite sure kind of thing.
Yes, the opposite, exactly. So that's the third, that I think it's we know that that was C.S. Lewis's means of providing information about how to live a good spiritual life. We know this. So clever. I'm forever obsessed. I think that his advice, oh, it's a hard question to think about what he would say about the advice that he would provide to an individual living the life that he has written about, to always reach out. He seemed to, in the Screwtape Letters, a big remedy to many of the issues faced by the characters created by his life and the demons would be to reach out and speak. I try to explore that on a modernized level through understanding depression. In I think it was which chapter, I can't remember which one it was. The notion of how the demons of our mind or actual demons are good at creating walls around our mind, within our minds, and locking ourselves down. To the point where we actually cannot think about the concept of reaching out and seeking help for whatever it is we're going through is not just impossible, but not even thought of in the first place. So I'd like to think that C.S. Lewis was at, in the way that he was so open about his own, in sharing his experiences and his life, I would like to think that he would encourage others to do the same. And so that's and I think a very important part, because if you're talking and communicating openly and honestly with people, it's very hard. Thankfully, the goodwill of nature, the good-willed nature of people, with Christ working through them, it's a very hard battleground for a demon to play in.
Joshua, thank you so much. I feel like there's so much more that we could be saying. Maybe we'll have to, do another one of these podcasts. But in the meantime, if people want to get a hold of your book, where are some of the places that they can go to get hold of that?
Yes, I believe it's on Amazon. The Sanctioned Little Press have their own website as well. But yeah, it's available. It's just type in the Incendus Letters into Google, and I believe you're able to purchase it through any medium of your preference.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. As always, you can find out more about our guests through the links below. And don't forget to check out our website, where you can find lots of great articles and podcasts, as well as more C.S. Lewis content. Visit premierunbelievable.com. And don't forget about our next Unbelievable live event with Tim Keller on the 13th of December. Dubbed New York's Pastor to Skeptics, Tim Keller is a renowned speaker, author, and former pastor of Redeemed Presbyterian Church, New York. Having written and spoken frequently on the problem of pain, Tim has faced his own journey with suffering since being diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in 2020. Tim will share some of the lessons that he's learned over the past 2 years, as well as giving his thoughts on the direction of US church and culture. Join Tim Keller, Justin Briley and me in a live show on Tuesday the 13th of December, where you'll also be able to ask your questions. It's free to attend online from anywhere in the world. Register at unbelievable.live. Thank you for listening and see you next time.